Hello, everybody. This week's Parshas Nasoi. And Tosfos in Maseches Tainus on the Tesem and Aleph brings an interesting story. Brings a medrash. There's once a man, he was very wealthy. He had a lot of fields. And every year, his field would make 1,000 kurim worth of wheat, which is an enormous sum. And he would go and he would give meiser, take 100 kur off of that and give it to tzedakah. Year in and year out, this is what would happen. And one year the man got old, he was starting to die, and he called his son in and he told him, look, this is my field, this is how much it makes, but make sure to give meiser. Son said, sure, of course. Fine, the father dies, the son takes over. The first year he gives meiser, everything goes fine. The second year he's sitting there packing up the 100 kurim for meiser, and Zitzahara gets a hold of him. He's like, it's a lot of money, 100 kur worth of wheat to give away for meiser. Maybe I'll give 99. He took one bundle, a couple bundles off, put it on the side. Sure enough, the next year, the field didn't make the same. So he got more stingy. He felt harder to give meiser. And it got to the point where the field went down and started making only 100 kurim worth of wheat. And Tosfos says, that's the pasuk in this week's parasha. The pasuk says, in Parakei, pasuk Yud, V'ish es kedoshav lo yiyu. And a man, his holies will be to him. Says Rashi, what does it mean, his holies will be to him? The portion he was supposed to give to Kedusha, the portion he was supposed to give as Meiser, to Tzedakah, to the Kayin, to the Levi, all that will be to him instead of what he was supposed to get originally. Originally, he was supposed to get 90%. The Levi was supposed to get 10%. Now, kedoshav, his holy portions, lo yiyu, that's all he's going to have. Why is that? Why is such a direct result that a person stops giving meiser, stops giving tzedakah, that he only gets what he was supposed to get for the what he was supposed to give as tzedakah originally? So Chafetz Chaim Alter brings a beautiful mashal. He says, you have a farmer. He harvests all his wheat. He brings a big wagon to town, and he wants to sell it. So a merchant comes up to him and says, look, I want to buy some of your wheat, and as I fill up my bags of wheat, I'll give you a token. And that's how we keep track. I'll give you one penny per bag. At the end, we'll count the pennies, and we'll see how many bags I took, and we'll arrange payment in accordance. Okay? Fine. So the merchant calls his guys. They start filling up bags, and the pennies start piling up. And the farmer's looking at the pennies, looking at the workers, but it's a lot of pennies. He gets really excited. So he goes and he sneaks a couple of pennies, puts them in a pocket, looks around, no one noticed. Starts stealing more pennies, puts them in his pocket. Sure enough, the deal goes down, everything's fine. And the farmer then realizes he's an idiot. For every penny that's on the table, he's going to get $10, $20 for a bag. Now, he's missing out all that money because he stole those couple of pennies. Says the Chafetz Chaim, it's the exact same thing with us. Every time we give a dollar to tzedakah, Hashem gives us back so much bracha. Aser b'shvil shetes asher. For every tenth that we give, we get so much wealth. But we're so busy stealing those pennies. We're being so busy being so short-sighted that we hurt ourselves in the end. And a person has to spend that time to stop and to recognize the reality. Every dollar he gives, everything he gives to tzedakah, he gets back tenfold. And Hashem should all be zeichet to take this pasuk to heart and to be to take and to appreciate and to realize what it means to have that ability to give meiser and all the bracha that it gives us. The Medrash Rabbah in the Parsha, in Perek Tes, Siv Vav, brings a story. Reb Meir, the great Tano, was one Friday night, he was giving a drasha, he was giving a shir, and the shir went overtime. It went late. And there was a woman there who was listening to the shir. And because the shir went so late, by the time she got home, the candles had gone out already. The house was dark, and her husband was very angry. Her husband said, why are you coming home so late? I'm not letting you in. She said, it wasn't my fault. I was at the drasha, I was by Rav Meir, and he went overtime. Now the husband, being a special person, said, I am not letting you back into this house until you go back to the Beis Medrash and spit in Rav Meir's face. Okay? Rabbi said, such people aren't only now. They apparently existed throughout history. That was her husband. Okay, so the woman doesn't know what to do. It's Friday night. She's locked out of her house. So she goes back to the shul. And she cries and she davens to Hashem. Sure enough, Reb Meir gets a knock at the door. Eliyahu HaNavi's there. Eliyahu HaNavi tells Reb Meir, because of you, there's a Jewish woman who's locked out of her house tonight. Eliyahu tells him the whole story. And Reb Meir runs to the Medrash and thinks of a plan. He's sitting there learning. And he tells his students and he says, my eye's hurting me. So he turns, he sees that lady in the Ezra's Nashim, and he says, here, I need your help. There's a secret sgula that if you spit into my eye 7 times, it'll make my eye feel better. Now the woman's obviously very surprised, she's confused. Mary says, no, please, I need your help. Please spit in my eye 7 times. Fine, she goes, she spits in his eye 7 times. And then her mayor turns to her and says, look, go back to your husband and tell him, you told me to spit in his face once, I spit in his face 7 times. Okay, so the woman leaves, and the students are in an uproar. They ask her, mayor, what in the world just happened? You had a lady come and spit in your face 7 times because of her husband? What's going on? So Mary told them the whole story, and the students got even more upset. They said, Rebbe, you're the Gadol Hadar. Some lowlife out there is telling his wife to spit in your face. We'll go to his house. We'll beat him silly. We'll explain to him what it means to have Kavod HaTorah. And he'll let his wife back into the house. Why are you getting yourself degraded in public and having yourself spit in the face for some mishugana? So Mary tells them like this. He says, in this week's parasha, we find the story of a saita, a woman who secluded herself with another man after being warned by her husband. And now there's a doubt, we don't know, did she sin with the other man or not? And her husband, so to speak, their relationship's on the rocks. And Hashem says, take my name, erase it in water, give it to this woman to drink. And if she's innocent, the water won't kill her, the water will turn into a baby. And it'll clarify her name and it'll bring shalom between the husband and the wife. Says your mayor, I am no greater than Hashem. If Hashem's willing to have his name disgraced to bring shalom between a husband and a wife, for sure my name should be disgraced as well. That's the Medrash. Says about Eli Lapian and Lev Eliyahu, he doesn't understand. That's true. If there's no other way to bring peace between a husband and a wife, then you have to do what you have to do. But why, in the case of her mayor, did he get himself embarrassed? The students had a good point. There's other ways to explain to this husband how there should be shalom. They would go and they would explain to him physically what it means to do the right thing. Why does her mayor have to disgrace himself? Says Rabbi Yapian, that's what her mayor is telling them. He's telling them a very deep point. Let's look back at the parasha. Hashem couldn't think of any other way to make the Saita waters work. Why did Hashem choose to use his name to be erased to make the Saita waters work? He could have done anything else. Hashem controls the world. Why this way? Says Rabbi Yapian, you know why Hashem chose that way? To teach us this lesson. This is the only way people are going to understand the true value of shalom. If Hashem says, I need my name to be erased to bring shalom, I'm showing the world that shalom is so important, that shalom is so integral for the, so to speak, continuation of Klal Yisrael, that I want my name to be erased to show them that shalom is even more important than that. Hashem's teaching us this lesson. It's not just if you have to. This is how important shalom is. Hashem wants that lesson to be taught to everyone. Says Reb Meir, I want to teach that lesson to you as well. You're right, I could have made shalom a different way. But I wanted to teach you how important shalom is. I wanted you to know that nothing is more important than shalom. Shalom is the most important thing that we have. And Rabbi say, if Reb Meir is willing to take public humiliation to bring shalom between a husband and a wife, we forget on a larger scale other people's husbands and wives. Ourselves, on our own house. Yes, a spouse can sometimes hurt your ego. Yes, a spouse can sometimes not properly show you the amount of respect. But if Hashem's honor and Reb Meir's honor is worth sacrificing to keep shalom in a house, I think our ego and our little, so to speak, honor can also take a hit once in a while for the sake of shalom. The parasha continues, and the parasha talks about a nazir. And the Gemara in Saita explains what's the connection between the Parsha of Saita and the Parsha of Nazir. Says the Gemara, Shekel haroya soita biko kula yazer atzva min hayayin. Anybody who goes to the Beis HaMikdash and sees that Saita in her downfall, in her disgrace, he should, so to speak, take upon himself a vow of Nazirus. He should separate himself from wine. Saita was someone who acted immorally, and wine causes that kind of behavior. A person should take upon himself a vow to abstain from wine for 30 days to incorporate that lesson. Now, Rav Shach asks the obvious question. He says, if you had to pick out of anybody out there in Klal Yisrael, who's the one who really has to work upon his mid of self-control about not drinking alcohol? If you would ask me, says Rav Shach, the last person who would have to work on it is the guy who just saw the site on her downfall. He's the guy who just witnessed the destruction that drinking and frivolity can bring. The guy who didn't see the site on her downfall, he should be the guy who's taking the Nazirus vow. The guy who just saw it, he knows what it does. He's not going to mess up. He's been warned. Says Rav Shach, the Torah is teaching us the opposite. The reality of life is a person can see something, a person can get inspired, a person can be shaken. But if a person doesn't make a practical commitment, if a person doesn't take real decisive action to change something in his day-to-day routine, that will wane in a second. Nothing about that inspiration is going to last. The inspiration is like a flash of light in a dark forest. It's supposed to be something that helps you make the right choice, but that has to come with a practical commitment. You know, the Alter from Kellum brings a story. There was once a man, a philosopher, who his father was a drunk. Now, obviously, for this philosopher, who's a brilliant man, he's a man of self-control, a man of great wisdom. It's very embarrassing to have a drunken father. So he figures he's going to get his father to change. He's going to really kind of reform him. So what does he do? He goes to the local tavern and he waits. And sure enough, 11 o'clock at night, one of the real steady drunks comes out of the tavern. And the guy's rolling around the street. He's throwing up upon himself. He's covered in vomit. He's banging into lampposts. He's rolling on the floor. He looks horrendous. So he quickly runs, gets his father, and he pulls him and says, here, quick, look, this is what you look like. This is what it looks like when a person is drunk and trashed. And to his shock, his father goes over to the drunk, bends down to this drunk on the floor, and he whispers something into his ear. And the drunk responds, and his father comes back. And the philosopher goes to his father and says, what'd you ask him? What'd you talk to him about? So his father says, I was asking him where he got that booze that gave him such a high. Says the Alter from Kellum, you see that the power of the Yetzer Hara is, even when it sees someone in its downfall, a person still goes back to his habits. A person sees what he wants to see and incorporates what he wants to incorporate. The Torah is telling us that a person who sees a Saita in her downfall, he has to make a commitment to not do what she did. He has to make a commitment to really change himself. Simply witnessing something is not enough. It doesn't make the effect. Rabbi Isai, it's all about practical, realistic, small commitments to change. Kabbalists, if a person does that, something big will happen. If a person just hopes that the inspiration and something that he sees will make a difference in the long run, he's wasting his time. When the Torah tells us about the laws of a Nazir, it tells us he can't do three things. He can't drink wine, he can't groom his hair, and he can't become tame, he can't become impure to mesim, to dead people. And the Mefarshim all deal with this. Try to understand. Not drinking wine, that makes a lot of sense. It's self-control. It gives a person the ability, so to speak, to not loosen up or do something wrong. Wine can be a very dangerous thing. That makes sense. Not grooming. It's also a certain, so to speak, separation from physicality. It's a removing yourself from the trying to be, you know, attractive, trying to be good looking. It's a certain, so to speak, abstinence from this world. But what is not becoming tummy to dead people have to do with anything? What's the, so to speak, kedusha and precious and self, so to speak, abstinence that comes from not becoming tummy to dead people? Most normal people don't have a taiva, they don't have a physical urge to become tummy to dead people. Why does a nazir have to separate himself? So the Farshim say a fascinating thing. They say that a nazir is somebody who begins to experience very high levels of kedusha. When someone takes on a vow of naziris, they become very holy. Rebbeinu Bechaya says he becomes holier than the kohen gadol. Say the Mefarshim to the point where it's very likely he'll have Ruach HaKodesh. He'll start getting Nevuah, Ruach HaKodesh. And if he's allowed to be near dead people, if he's allowed to go into a Beis HaKvarsh, into a cemetery, people may think that he got this level of Kedusha because of sources of Tumah, because of hanging out with dead people, kind of like sorcery. So to make sure that no one makes that mistake, we tell him to abstain himself from Tumah. That's what the Mefarshim say. And you think about it, it's so hard to understand. What did he do already? He didn't drink wine for 30 days. I know a lot of guys don't drink wine for more than 30 days. He didn't cut his hair. He didn't shave. Okay. Big deal. We're not talking about anything crazy. We're not talking about any kind of massive. He didn't fast for a month. How could it be that he can get to the level of Ruach HaKadosh, of Nevuah, from abstaining from such small things? How could that be? To the point where we look at the words of the pasuk, it says ish ki yafli, when a person is mafli and neder naziris l'Hashem. What does it mean mafli? It says Ibn Ezra, he did a davar pella. He did something of wonderment. What's the big wonder? What's so amazing about what he did? Says Ibn Ezra, he did something very, very big. You know what he did? He made a fundamental shift. Says Ibn Ezra, the whole entire world goes achar tayvosef. What makes the world go round? Money, power, lust. Everyone else in this world is ticking because of their personal drives and desires. This nazir, he did a davar pella. He did a wondrous thing. He went and said, I want to change. I want to control my lusts. I want to be a nazir. Says Ibn Ezra, nazir is a nazir. Nazir is a crown. He's a melech. This guy is a king. Why? Because he wanted to control his taivas. He wanted to be in charge. He wanted to make the human being in charge of the taiva, of the desires. That, says Ibn Ezra, is something which can make a person so holy. It's not about doing massive, crazy, so to speak, levels of precious. It's about making a decision to change. It might be a small step. He won't have so much wine. He won't groom his hair. But the point is, there's a fundamental difference between him and everybody else. He wants to control his taivas. He wants to control his urges, his lusts, his desires. He wants to become a melech. He wants to become somebody who's in control of himself. Everybody else, they want their taivas to control them. When a person makes that kind of decision, when a person starts to change himself, when a person makes that decision that he wants to rule his taiva, he becomes somebody worthy of Ruach HaKodesh. He's already on the highest level, more than a kohen gadol. Why? Because he's living a different type of life. He's somebody who wants to be in control. Rabbi says, it's not about doing crazy big things. It's about making a decision. So I'm making that small decision that I want to start being in charge of my taiva. Which Hashem should all be zeicha to take the lessons of the parsha and to use them. And shalom, bring bracha to us and to all our families. Have a wonderful Shabbos.